Tune in to Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Community Living Show. Well, it looks like Kelly will be back shortly. He's been away. He needed a break, a rest. Recharge those batteries, right? We all need that. So we're still playing some of our favorites. This time we're going to play Robin Mattack again. And I saw Robin Mattack recently while shooting the pilot episode to my new TV show, Balanced Living, and which should be aired in 2018 for the new season of 2018. So I ran into her recently, and we were joking around about how we still haven't gotten through all the questions that she provided us because she is such a wonderful wealth of information. So with that being said, let's get to Robin's interview.
And if you have any requests, shout them out. Play that same song. All right, same song. Here we go.
Oops, wait a second. Hang in there. Okay, maybe this is...
to see, it lays dormant for many, many years.
Peg, Easter vibration, and create a life of choice and freedom. Robin has trained in a multitude of disciplines from psychology, business, energy, healing systems, conflict resolution. There's one we need right now. and she has experienced both breast cancer and hepatitis C. Wow. You've been through a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you. An auspicious day, I think.
Yeah. So... wow, that's quite a chunk. Hep C and breast cancer. I hope one didn't come from the other or something.
No, well, that's the thing with hepatitis C. It lays dormant for many, many years, and it was only through the unlayering of the other illnesses that I went through that we finally found that diagnosis, and I was actually able to heal from that as well.
Wow. Okay. So... let's go through a bit of the other stuff. Multitude of disciplines and healing systems and vibration. That's the word I was looking for.
There you go.
So what does vibration mean?
So we all kind of tap into it. We just don't realize that it's really, most of us, it's on an unconscious level. Mm-hmm. So today we've got the beautiful sunshine and we feel better. And we're actually tapping into the vibration of that through the earth and the sun. And so we actually feel better. And we know when it's a gray day, we kind of feel a bit more down. So our vibration is a bit lowered. So we can do different techniques to help us raise that vibration and not kind of buy into that negative energy or when our vibration is lower. When we can understand that and know we have a choice, then we can raise it and feel better. And wow. So we can live our life feeling healthier, more at ease, more at peace, more a life of choice and freedom. And then we also infect other people with that beautiful vibration and help them lift them up. So it's starting with the self first, and then we can help others.
Wow. Cool. You bring me to a question because it's a nice sunny day out there, and we've gone through all that winter and everything. And I'm one of those people who suffers from SAD.
Mm-hmm.
And for those out there, seasonal effectiveness disorder.
Yeah.
Wintertime, I get really down. So what would be some of the things for people with SAD to raise their vibration up so they rise above that winter blues.
So there's several different things they can do, and having a mother who had mental illness and she had depression, so lived with this for a lot of years, and saw how she just bought into that she didn't have any choice. And so what we can do is first be aware. That's number one. Until we're aware and bring those unconscious patterns forward, then we can't do anything about it. Once we do have it, then we can do things. One of the things I love for people to do to have an instantaneous shift is find music that they love. So find something that's positive and really resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, think about the words too. I know a lot of people say, oh, I just like the beat. All of those words in the song actually work in our subconscious. So actually look at the words of the song. And what I recommend people do is find that one song for you that really uplifts you. And then you can tap into that, have it on your iPod or wherever, on your phone if you need to. And when you start to feel that slide into the negative or into the sad, put that music on. And then you'll notice, oh, you can have a shift there. And even if possible, sing along with it, because then we connect more to our body. Because often we kind of sit outside of our physical body, so we kind of keep the mind and body separate. And through meditation and other techniques, we can bring that closer together. And especially with the music, when we can feel it, and also with the singing,
right.
there's a increase in our lung capacity, so we're breathing deeper automatically without even realizing it. Because we all hear, you know, breathe, 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 breathe. We hear it through meditation. We hear it through all these other techniques. And most people are breathing very shallow. They're not breathing into their diaphragm.
Right.
So this is an easy way to do that without having to really focus on it. When you're singing, you're actually doing that automatically.
Robin, I kind of have a little bit of a disagreement on there. There are some times where myself, if I feel depressing or sad, then I think about the exact opposite, more of a sad tune of getting that kind of emotional feeling. And then if I were to think about that for a long time, I would say, okay, you have resolved this kind of problem. Now you need to fix this situation. Am I right?
That could be. So, for example, if there's something specific that you're dealing with, maybe there's a grief issue. I find a lot of people do have grief about something in their life, whether it's a situation or maybe a regret or something that they haven't fully dealt with. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to tap into that and take that time, a lot of people don't want to take that time and that effort to actually deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're willing to go there, that's great. And if music helps you, often we use movies, like we'll watch a sad movie when we're feeling down.
Right.
And then there's a catharsis with that, where we can express the feeling that we might not have been able to get to.
Right.
In kind of a general sad situation, if there's nothing specific that we're tying that to and not willing to take the time in that moment to go to that deeper layer, then you can use the music that's kind of more vibrational lifting to get yourself out of it and then take the time later.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of do that deeper work where you want to deal with the specific emotion. So it is very valuable. I think we can't shift permanently until we go to that deeper place where there is the deeper feeling that we need to resolve.
Right.
And right. accept that and acknowledge that and have that gentleness and kindness with ourselves for having the ability to go there and really appreciating ourselves for that.
Kind of makes
sense. Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess we should just move on here.
Yeah.
How did you become aware of find all these different things to be trained in, all the disciplines? How did you discover that they actually existed?
Yeah, I think that's a really unfolding. I've always been kind of a curious, questioning child. Got into trouble at an early age. Both my parents grew up in very strict Catholic backgrounds. Grandparents on my dad's side were Irish Catholic, and on my mom's side, Ukrainian, very strict Catholic where they couldn't do anything on Sundays, you know, lived on the farm. And so I remember at maybe 11 questioning about how my mom could still be involved in religion, yet religion was saying, well, you can't read horoscopes, you can't do all of these things. She was reading Edgar Cayce and things back in the 60s, and that was really frowned upon. And so I just said, well, I can't believe in this because it doesn't make sense. You're saying one thing and doing another. And for some reason, I always had that perspective.
Yeah. Okay. I can poke fun at this because I grew up Roman Catholic myself. Went from K through grade 12 as in Catholic school. But that's the Catholic way. It's like, do as I say, don't do as I do.
Yeah, and I've always been fascinated why. I think I've always been fascinated with the mind and people. And also coming from a history of sexual abuse and different things, I was very cautious, always looking what's going on around me. So in psychological terms, we call it hypervigilance. So we're so aware of other things and what's going on. So I was always trying to make sense of it. And so whenever I would start to do something towards psychology, I felt better, and then I'd go away from that, and then things would kind of not feel so right. So after a while, I learned to kind of follow the path, even though it was very zigzaggy, through, because at that time, I was really interested actually in media. And I grew up in a small town, and I came to Vancouver to go to school, and I wanted to go to BCIT. There were no women TV producers at that time, no one that actually worked behind the camera. And I couldn't get in. And so then I ended up back in psychology. And from there, I did a lot of dream work at college, did dream journaling, was working with astral travel. I was reading Carlos Castaneda in grade 11. So always looking at that different kind of mindset. And then I started working, and then I was doing psychology, doing a lot of work at night. And actually, the big turning point for me to really go on that healing path and that spiritual journey was dealing with the breast cancer. And I was diagnosed at age 44, which they say is young, so anyone under 45. So here I was in this situation where I was kind of the anomaly and really had to do a lot of work to find out what was going on and what's the best treatment and all of these things, and getting bombarded and not understanding this was bringing up the other traumas in my life that I hadn't dealt with. And so I ended up spending about 6 months on my sofa just going inward and doing internal work. And then it was like, okay, it's time to get back to work. How do I do that? I was around all these stressed out people. I worked at WorkSafe, and great organization, but it's like 2,000 people and they're dealing with people's traumas all the time. And I didn't feel grounded. I was taking on their energy and I just felt so vulnerable. And then the weirdest place, you know, when you need something, it shows up. I was at a wine, cheese, and tarot card reading party.
That's one heck of a combination.
It's a wine and cheese.
And tarot card reading.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I met a woman there, and she said, oh, I took this course, and you get a shield. You actually get two shields in this course, so you're not taking other people's negative energy on.
Oh, okay. I did a wine and cheese cross-country scheme, so that's... different matter. So,
yeah.
So then I was just, I took a leap of faith and it was in the class the next week.
When you say shield, you mean an emotional guard or something that you, like a barrier, the emotional barrier that you can stop other people's emotions from coming through to you?
So what it is, it's an energy shield. So as I trained in this, I've actually become a teacher of it now. So as a teacher, actually raise your vibration by doing what's called power transference. So over the course of the 4 weeks, your vibration has shifted the equivalent of 7 years of training in Tibet. And so with that system, you're bringing in light and love of the universe, and you're using to use that energy to shield yourself so you can bring the love in and have that barrier so you're not taking on the negativity.
Right.
And like a lot of us, we go to a party. Sometimes we're feeling great when we go there.
Right.
And then we go, and after a while, we're feeling drained and tired. Yeah. And that's because we're taking on other people's emotions and feelings.
I get what you're saying. You have to be been to some of the parties I've gone to where somebody tried to overdose or tried to slit their wrist or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like what is wrong with you people? kind of thing. And by the time you've dealt with, I was always the one who had to go and help. Ex-rescue worker. Well, after I was injured really bad. Just recreational rock climbing, and so I had to give up the rescue work, but I found myself emotionally rescuing people.
And that's what we do as rescuers, right? And it's really about finding that part of ourselves where we want to be rescued,
right?
And that's where the emotional internal work is with that. Mm-hmm. And really, we all pick up information from each other and from the universe in different ways. And mm-hmm. you've probably heard of clairvoyant, where people are seers. There's a clairaudient, where we hear sound. And a lot of people are the clairsentient. And that's you, right? So you're picking up the energy. You're wanting to help. And the old way is we would actually go into other people's energy field to understand who they are. So then we could work with them. Mm-hmm. And with the shielding, we can keep that separate and still help them, but from a healthy place. And that's why the training was created. The founder, Faye, was tired of seeing people like yourself who are helpers getting injured and going into addiction and different things because they were taking on that energy and not staying healthy.
Yeah.
And so that's why it was initially taught, and now it's for anyone who wants to do that.
Yeah, because I habitually find myself drained.
Yeah.
And the addiction was, was I would disappear in the woods for like a few days, just disappear. Nobody would know where I was, and I would be off meditating in the woods.
And we do that, right? We isolate, so we're not taking on the other people's energy.
Right.
Yeah.
And now there's alternatives to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And that's why I love doing the work and watching the shift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That method worked up until my first marriage, and it's like, well, where are you going? It's like, I just need to get away, and it didn't work anymore. It's like because she wanted to come with me, and I really needed to get away from everybody, but it didn't. So it was like, okay, fine. And then I wasn't able to really recharge because I would then have this person with me that I was trying to isolate from, and it just didn't work anymore. So I had to find new ways of doing that.
Well, the thing is, too, because in relationships, it brings up our own neediness. Mm-hmm. And so for that other person, not being able to understand that you could have a relationship and have some separate time, it just wasn't a healthy relationship, and you didn't have the tools to do that.
Right.
Right? You know, as we go through these situations and learn and grow from them, then we realize, well, if we had the actual communication and dialogue, and that's where the conflict resolution mm-hmm. comes in with yourself and with the other person, it's like, it's not that I don't love you. It's just I need that space to do that.
Right.
And, you know, we can be separate and we can be together. Being separate doesn't reflect my love for you or my lack of love for you.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't find the words for that. We don't know how to go to that vulnerable place in ourselves.
Yeah, that was the exact problem. Is like I wasn't formulating the putting the right words in the right order so that she understood
exactly
this is what I need to do, and I'll come back, be refreshed, and our relationship would move forward and blossom more. So.
Yeah, and for her, it may be her way to recharge was being with people, where mm-hmm. for other people, it's that place where you need that silence, and that's for me too. I need that quiet time where I go to that stillness place within myself and have just that quiet, and for me, there's a vibration and a tone to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very much on the clairaudient way of receiving information. So there's just this really calm peacefulness that I find, and then I can recharge and be around people again.
Yeah. One of the things I'm having trouble with, I always want to say my empathy. When I'm away from people, I go to trees, and it's like I'm like mm-hmm. a big. Almost literally, I hugged the trees.
That's
and
great.
Brings the positive.
I was going to say, even though the tree is very big.
Yeah, even though the tree is very big.
The bigger, actually, the better sometimes.
Okay.
Nature is so healing.
Yeah, I had a wonderful spiritual experience in one of the old growth forests up near Rogers Pass. I can't remember the exact town, but there's an old growth
forest.
It was somewhere between Rogers Pass and Golden. Yeah. I can't remember the name of the town right now.
Was it during the Fiber Mile show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm experiencing a little brain fog right now.
Yeah. Nature is so healing.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
So.
Well, I want to take a break and give a chance to give it a few more minutes of rest, and we'll come back to both of you.
Okay.
You're listening to CITR 101.9.
Broadcasting from Vancouver in unceded Musqueam territory.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
But by leaving out the most important things you need to know, they can elevate awareness to a new all-time low.
I own my media.
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 The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members.
But if it's just left out, can you say the paper lied? A lot of things that happened didn't happen after all. If there's no one in the forest who will put it in the news, I guess the tree didn't fall.
Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
I'm joining today. You should too.
What is CITR's reputation, being that it's been around for so long?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's very active in the community because it's run by community members and UBC students, obviously. Whether you're into radio as a hobby or whether you want to get some real-world experience, it's a great place to go. It's like a very open and creative environment. Everybody that's, you know, working here seems really jazzed about what they're doing at the station. Just lots of really like good, like challenging music and spoken word content. It's a great station.
CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia, on unceded Coast Salish, Musqueam territory. Learn how to get involved at citr.ca.
And you're tuning into the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association networks across British Columbia. Hopefully we can get it across Canada as well. My name's Kelly Rayburn, along with Michael Rubin, and we're talking to Robin McTagg, who is the Holistic Healer. Am I got that right?
Master Holistic Healer.
Master Holistic Healer. Okay. And we were talking about some issues on the healing process, and especially if I'm myself, when I travel to some of these places in the Habitat for Humanity, for example. Like, for example, I went to Zambia and I went to Cambodia for these helpful stuff. And the volunteer work goes at it, every single day. And then all of a sudden, when that week's gone, you know, the work's gone, work's done, everything's done, you know, everybody's proud, you know, and everybody gets together for the final day and everything. And then finally, when you get a chance to travel with the team and everything, and you come back home, you're like, you're worn out. So that's how my kind of a story, how it goes. I guess volunteering, I mean, it does make a difference, but I mean, after when you come home and I'm like, oh, it's all done, and you feel kind of sad and stuff. But it kind of makes you feel good. Am I right?
Yeah, definitely. I love travel too. It gives us a different perspective, right? And it's that, to me, that's all what it's about, is raising our vibration or whatever we're doing, is to have that different perspective. And as individual people, we do want to help others. And we do, what happens is we feel drained by what we do because we're taking on the emotions. And especially Cambodia, I was there as well. And to see the sadness and the trauma that those people have gone through is amazing. So really to have that gentleness with ourselves and the compassion for ourselves first and realize how we're being affected. Because otherwise we're stuffing that down and not really feeling those feelings. And sometimes it's not till we come home that we actually can process it and realize what we were witnessing. And that's so powerful for those people to be witnessed by others and to understand and getting the help because they felt hopeless and helpless for so long. So you're giving them hope. You're letting them see that there's different ways of being. So then it's, and that's why I like the shielding work and the grounding, because if you go in with that already, with that protection, then you're not taking it on so much. You can have the feelings without actually taking it physically on. So if you're not doing that, it's really important to do the self-care when you get home. So really going to nature, being with your friends, allowing those feelings to come up and just letting the grief. We feel so much grief around that stuff and see all those young people that are deformed in the sex trade, being abused, the money that's going, that should be going to the UN, that's going to these people with the big fancy cars. It's hard to see that. It's hard to witness it. But being aware of it.
Yeah. So one of your accolades, shall we say, is dream coaching. What is dream coaching?
So dream coaching on the specifics is training through Marcia Weider's Dream University. And Marcia Weider was actually a coach for Oprah Winfrey. And so I really like the process itself. Basically, it's a 10-step process done over 12 weeks. And we start with the part of where we actually start to dream again. You know, for a lot of people in transition, whether it's in school, whether it's a mom and the kids are now growing up and they have time for themselves, or we've lost our job, or we just feel that there's something more to our life, there's this process we need to go through. It's like, I haven't allowed myself to dream what's next for me in my life. Or it could be something simple. I want to plan a trip, right? It's from the very simplistic to something, the bigger part of our life where we want to do something more. So we go through the process where we start with the dreaming, and then there's parts of looking at your purpose, the integrity with the self, all the way through the actual planning of the projects and who do you need on that dream team, and do you need them long-term, short-term, what do I need to actually implement what it is that I want to bring to fruition into this reality. And so one of the big pieces that people don't realize is that integrity piece. To me, that kind of eats away at our self-worth if we're not actually in alignment with our values and our purpose. So what happens is we say we're going to do something, then we don't do it. And then all these pieces kind of erode that integrity with ourselves. So we do a big piece around that. And what are the things that you have unfinished? Is it time to let that go? Is it time to complete that? So working on the very practical, and then because of the energy work, I work with people as well with where are they stuck energetically and looking at the patterns and the shifts that are needed there. So it may be, for example, this is going to create change in my life. What's it going to do with the other people around me? How is it going to affect them? Instead of coming from that place of self first, this is what I really need. This is what I want. I'm allowed to dream that big again to what I do want to bring into my life. And that scares people, makes people sad. It's thinking about what's that effect on the external. And we really need to look internally and see what's that shift internally that I need to do so that I'm in congruence with my life. And also I have the, I know that it's valid. I trust myself. To me, that's a big piece of it. We, from an early age, we're taught not to trust ourselves. As, you know, parents mean well. At the same time, we get these messages. You know, we hurt ourselves. And it's like, oh, you don't feel that way. And especially for males in our society, right? It's like, don't cry, don't do this. And we start to discount our feelings and our views of what's going on. And then we start to question ourselves. So that trust is eroded at a very young level. Mm. And so part of what we need to do is then tap back into that trust in ourselves and our connection to the universe and know when we're on the right path for ourselves. And it doesn't really matter what's going on the external and having that strength.
You're listening to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. We're talking with Robin Mittag, who is a master healer. And I will pass it over to Michael again.
You know, that last bit, you reminded me of something that from growing up. The saying was, yours is not to think, yours is just to simply do. So right there is like, oh, I had a thought. Well, it's no good because you didn't tell me I thought it.
Right.
And it didn't matter if it was at home or if it was at school, the message was the same. So there's a long process to getting back to trusting your own thoughts, right?
Yeah, there's layers of it, right? I mean, even in university, I remember in psychology, we talked about the layers of the onion. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. And even in the training, we deal with patterns all the time. And we'll say, oh, I thought I dealt with that. And it's just that more subtle layer of the same issue. For example, for a lot of people who have dealt with sexual abuse, for example, there's this worldview of being the victim. Right. And not even realizing that they're there. And it's like everything, the trust on the external, the trust in themselves has mm-hmm. all been eroded, because especially if they tried to tell someone and no one would listen, or maybe one parent was involved or a sibling and the other ones didn't protect them.
Right.
Then they really, it's like, where do I start? How can I ever start that process again? And then a lot of parents, in, at least in my generation, it was all the adults do as I say, not as I do, and don't speak if you don't have something nice to say.
Right. Right.
So we get all of those messages. So it's first acknowledging that that's what you were told and realizing you do have a choice to do something different. Mm-hmm. And to me, the biggest piece there is then dealing with the grief. And then we get to the anger.
Right.
Because the biggest piece, especially for people who haven't had the ability to express those feelings, is they feel they're going to explode or that they're going to be the abuser, mm-hmm. right? Like the other person did to them. So they've taken on that role. And to realize there's different ways to do this. There's a gentler, kinder, safer way to do that.
Right.
And to me, that's the most important thing, is that safety first, so that we feel safe enough and our little one inside feel safe enough to express what are those feelings, and then work with that. And it's a layer, because often we feel like if I start this process, I'm going to open up a can of worms and I'll never get myself out of it. Mm. And that's really not true, because we can deal with it layer by layer, piece by piece. Often we can have that piece where we just feel raw and emotional, just like when you've seen a movie and it brings up all these feelings. Like for myself, I remember there were several kids in my high school that had suicide. And mm-hmm. so I'd watch a movie about that and I'd just like cry my eyes out and remember those people that I went to school with that are no longer with us.
Right.
And then I felt raw and vulnerable and I let that sit. Right. And I let those feelings kind of dissipate, deal with all the feelings that came up before I'd go to the next layer. And it might not be for months later. But I allowed myself to come back to that kind of sense of peace and calm with it and realize what I was dealing with before I went to the next layer. So right. I wasn't feeling overwhelmed.
Hmm. Yeah, because it's kind of funny how people still keep bringing it back. And then I have a friend, she's dreaming big about her financial coaching practice, and she said, well, if I sell so many of this, I'll make about, she put it in terms of money, and she said, I'll make about $5,000 a month. And then all these people that she knew said, oh, you're just dreaming way too big, you need to lower your expectations. And I was the only voice that said, what's wrong with you dreaming big?
Exactly.
How are you supposed to achieve it if you don't dream it big and go after it.
Exactly. And we need to have that feeling with it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the part, like, people have read The Secret and all these things, and they get bits and pieces. But if we could have learned all that stuff through books, we would have learned it by now, right? We need the one-on-one or some type of vibrational shift mm-hmm. to actually let go of that pattern of the limiting belief around the mentality of poverty. And so many of us are caught in that. And I know for myself, it's something I still have to work with. Part of my life, I grew up on welfare. There was my mom and I, right? So there was never enough. I had hand-me-downs. You know, we didn't have the best food.
No.
Sometimes it was like bread and butter sandwich, you know,
yeah.
And being ostracized at school because I wasn't, you know,
right.
the same. And I was very shy and quiet and all of these things. So when yeah. I start to have that dream, those other thoughts come in. And again, it's that dealing with those feelings and thoughts that come in and not just disregarding them. Because a lot of this stuff out there says, oh, just think happy thoughts,
right.
just do this, just be positive. Mm. Well, we do have to be positive. At the same time, we have to deal with those underlying feelings. Mm. Otherwise, they're going to continue to be there.
It's kind of similar to what I learned from school, is think of your plan. Think about it. And I do that a lot of times. I think about what I want to do, where I want to go, what are things that are more very interesting to see. Now you get to the other stage, it's the planning and doing. Now the planning and doing takes either by yourself, partly, mostly I'm an autistic person, but the thing is, if you're like trying to travel to somebody, you must let everybody else know about it. Well, what if I don't want to let anybody else know about it? Because, you know, I'm trying to do this plan on my own, setting my goals up straight, and, you know, doing it on my own kind of situation. Thank you very much. And then doing the planning. And then of course, there's a third term of looking back of, I did the thing to myself. I did the process and stuff that I did. And I accomplished it myself. That's the kind of way most people would do the kind of the three stages that I've kind of learned on it at school. So
that's true. We do need to celebrate along the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people forget. We don't wait till the end and celebrate. It's celebrating those little things along the way. It's the same with me dealing with physical injuries.
Mm.
When we're going through it day by day, it feels like it's never ending, that you're never getting any better. Then when you look back 3 months or 6 months later, you see where you have increased.
Mm-hmm.
You have more energy in the day. You can do more physically. You can walk longer, whatever it is. Same with your project, right? It's like, oh, I did accomplish this piece or that piece, instead mm-hmm. of looking at the whole piece. And that's why with the dream coaching, you have to look at the big picture, then you get into the smaller pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Because without looking at the smaller pieces and doing those, you're not going to accomplish the big thing.
Right.
So intuitively, you've tapped into that and said, this is what works for me. For some people, they do need that coach or that person to help them where they get stuck, because we can mm-hmm. get caught in our own patterns. And right. when we're in it, we can't see it.
Right.
So that other person gives that perspective and can say, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? I see you doing this. Is that the best way to do that? Or have you thought about another way to do that? Or is that mm-hmm. something that you've continually done and you keep getting to the same place and you don't move forward from there?
Or the same kind. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So there's the balance of, depending on the project, of course, too. If it's something simple, and, you know, I know it's a 3-month project and I know all the pieces and I've done this hundreds of times and I know I can accomplish it on my own, great.
Mm.
Maybe you want to look at something different and see, is there the possibility of looking at it from a different perspective? So important. Mm. Have those celebrations.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to leave it there for right now. We're going to come up to our 40-minute break here. So so we're talking to Robin McTague, who is a master healer, and we'll come back to her in just a moment. This is the Community Living Show. I'm Kelly Rayburn, along with Michael Ruben Cloggs. And you're tuning to both of our Vancouver stations, Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, operating from Fridays from 2 to 2:30, and CITR 101.9 FM, which is streaming online at CITR.ca, which is operating from 9 to 10 in the morning. We'll be back in a moment.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
But by leaving out the most important things you need to know, they can elevate awareness to a new all-time low.
I own my media.
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 The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members.
But if it's just left out, can you say the paper lied? A lot of things that happened didn't happen after all. If there's no one in the forest who will put it in the news, I guess the tree didn't fall.
Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
I'm joining today. You should too.
What is CITR's reputation, being that it's been around for so long?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's very active in the community because it's run by community members and UBC students, obviously. Whether you're into radio as a hobby or whether you want to get some real-world experience, it's a great place to go. It's like a very open and creative environment. Everybody that's, you know, working here seems really jazzed about what they're doing at the station. Just lots of really, like, good, like, challenging music and spoken word content. It's a great station.
CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia, on unceded Coast Salish, Musqueam Territory. Learn how to get involved at CITR.ca.
This is the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm Kelly Rayburn, along with Michael Ruben Cloggs, and we're talking about healing. And Robin McTague is the healer master, and I'll pass the microphone to you, Michael. You've got all the questions to her.
I do have all the questions. How did that happen?
I don't. I'm just a switcher, so.
Yeah, it's okay. No, you bring very valuable content to us, Kelly.
So, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. So, with everything we've talked about, it's like change is good, but why is it so difficult?
Well, it's interesting as humans, right? We're funny creatures. We're complex in a lot of ways, yet we're very simple. Usually, our needs and our wants are very basic. Mm-hmm. Yet, our mind has put us into this state where we're often in survival mode because of stuff that's happened to us. So our mind wants to keep us safe.
Okay.
So until we can actually tap into that other part of ourself, which is the spirit.
Right.
And start to see that we're actually going through change all the time. There isn't any stasis in life, right? We're either changing or we're almost going backwards. So as time moves forward, we're actually shifting and changing and growing along with that. We just don't think about it that way. Our mind has put in different mechanisms to think that, okay, I'm going this way, put on the brakes that didn't feel so safe before. So one of the things I like to do is reframe with people. Mm-hmm. So for me, there's some work out there around change that talks about transition. Change feels very external to people. So often we feel, you know, sometimes in relationships, well, this has to change.
Right.
Right. And then we get our back up and then we go into defensive mode because it's coming to us from the external and someone else is telling us to do it. And it's like, if you'd come to that on your own, and seen, well, this is a process, this is something we can work together, then that's different. So if we can go to that internal place and say, okay, what's the transition? What is it that I really want in my life? So if we can look at that other picture of what is the actual outcome and how do I want to feel, then we can go to a place of, oh, okay, well, maybe I can do this in a kind of kinder, gentler way. I'm all about kindness because I think that we're very harsh with ourselves. So I really like us to tap into that safety need for ourselves and the kindness and gentleness. So yeah, that we can see that it is a challenge because we have to work with our mind. There's that mechanism in place. At the same time, once we move towards something, the universe conspires to help us.
Right.
And for myself, I know one of my issues was I don't feel supported. And that was a story I told myself all the time. And we have these stories that we cling to. And until we can kind of sit back from them and say, well, what really is the truth of this? Yes, there were people. I didn't feel supported in my family. I didn't feel supported here. I didn't feel supported there. But this is a lesson for me. So the lesson is when I learn to support myself, then the other support comes in. So I have to take that, not only the mental step, but the actual physical step. And once I start to take those steps, I start to get the support. But until I actually can do that, and that's where sometimes you need help to do that, to right, actually see where you're stuck. And there's a lot of us, I want to change, and yet I feel stuck. And so they're not actually able to see it because they're stuck in the middle of it. And that's where the support from an external person or something else that can help, the meditation or whatever it is that they find, can help mm-hmm. them to see that. And then they can start to work and unravel where it is that they're caught in their story that they can't change.
Hmm. That's... That's really interesting. Yeah. Because I guess it happens a lot that people just get stuck.
As people keep saying, the
treadmill thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get on the hamster wheel, and it's like we get so busy with our day-to-day stuff, we don't make ourselves a priority. So it's everyone else. And the class I teach through the Training in Power, it's all about self first. Because if we can't heal ourselves, how do we help anyone else? It's right, like the oxygen mask on the plane, right? We're told to put it on ourselves first before we help the other person.
Yeah.
And how, but in life, do we do that?
Yeah, I'm a rescuer, right? Help them first and figure out, okay,
and
how do I get out of here?
You in the picture? And that was the story for me. With the breast cancer, I was doing for everyone else.
Right.
I was working full-time, doing the union work, doing strata work, everything else. Where was I in the picture? I wasn't in the picture. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my health gave out because I wasn't doing that. And so my lesson was to now teach self first because that's what I had to learn.
Mine was my incident wasn't as dramatic in one respect because it wasn't cancer or hep C. Mine was a collapse. Mm-hmm. My back decided, no, I'm not working any longer. So you had to figure out some other way of getting around.
Yeah.
Because of injuries and things like that. Never broken a bone, but I've torn lots of muscles. So I went to pick up an empty laundry basket and collapsed. And I had to arm crawl up the stairs back to my apartment, and I had a gaggle of kids, and I was like, okay, how do I take care of my kids? And it made me have to rethink everything I was doing so that I could get back on my feet again, because there was other people besides me I had to take care of. But the thing was, is like, okay, figure this out so that you can help them figure their stuff out.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because back problems, especially lower back, all relate to support energetically, right?
Right?
So here was your messaging, where is the support for you? Mm-hmm. How do you support those and support yourself?
Yeah.
And it was the work you did on yourself that allowed you to help them.
Right.
But until you went through that, you couldn't see it.
Yeah, you should have seen that. They're amazing because the kids were poking fun at me. It's like, ah, daddy can't get up. Daddy can't chase us. Ah. And I figured out one day, it took me like 3 days and I finally arm crawled up the wall and back onto my feet again. And they were like, and boy, did it hurt.
Yeah.
But I was actually able to figure out, there's like, okay, now how do I learn to rewalk and move around and everything? I finally was able to do that. So,
what a lesson. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was the lesson, is like, start taking care of yourself.
And that's why I think I feel like it's such a mission for me, because I don't want people to go to that place where they're actually injured or hurt. And we can cut this off at the pass in a way and start to do the work before we get to that.
Right.
And that's kind of my main focus, is let's get ourselves healthy before we go to that place. There's no need for us to do that anymore.
Right. So that's change. So now we're at the point where we're changing, and now we need all the other tools to help us heal. So what does that start to look like?
So when we start to change, often things will open up for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have different etherics. We have mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical. So often they'll show up in those kind of categories.
Mm-hmm.
So physically, are you taking your care of yourself? Hydration. You know, are you a coffee drinker or caffeine, pop, that kind of thing? If so, what are you doing with the water to replace that? Because so many of us go around dehydrated all of the time.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I was just traveling and people were saying, I can't believe you're 60. You don't look 60. And I said, because of the meditation and healing, the water, and eating healthy. Yes, I have some off days.
I was wondering about your age, because it's like you're talking about growing up in the 60s. Like, there's no way that she's almost 10 years older than me. No, I can't be. So I was actually placing it toward the end of the 60s, you know, with myself.
Oh, I'll be 61 this year, so.
Congratulations on that. No.
Yeah, no. So
it works.
It works. It definitely works. And we don't have to go to that place of denial. Often we think we're going to have to deal with these not eating everything I want. And we go into that, again, poverty mentality, rather than looking at what's the healthy way to do this. And I found a couple programs I really like. And it doesn't deal with the deprivation. Like a lot of those things out of there that we see out there, you know, you can have two eggs, this kind of thing. That's not sustainable. We have to deal with the different types of hunger and what's coming up. Often there's emotional eating, different things like that, learning to understand your relationship with food. And often as children, again, it's used as kind of a placating. And so it's like, oh, you know, well, be quiet. Here's some sugar.
Well, I guess it'll have to be the same thing with diabetes people as well.
Yes.
Because you need to eat. And you need to drink, and you need to digest the fluids. Not to mention not to eat sugar or any salt or any type of fatty foods, for that matter.
And there's healthy ways to do that. For example, with the salt, table salt is not healthy at all.
Mm.
If you do the good, like Celtic sea salt, that kind of thing, it has minerals, it's really good for you.
Mm.
So it's the kind of salt. So especially people, they're on the run, they're eating out, and all the sodium that's in, especially in the fast food industry, and the sugars are just really, really bad for us.
Mm-hmm.
End up with not only the diabetes, but the heart problems. I mean, heart disease is one of the biggest killers out there. So understanding those things and going, again, back to that place of self first. So what is this costing me in my physical health, in my relationships with people, my ability to do what I want in the world? Because seeing people shift where maybe they have excess weight and they're able to release that and see even like 5 pounds and they have more energy, they can do more. It's like, it's really freeing to see that they do have that choice. And every time you have that reward where you're seeing the benefit, then you can do more of it.
Then you also have organic foods that are more natural than the chemical foods than you normally eat. Yeah.
Yes, and for a lot of people, they say cost-wise, I can't afford that. So there's, if you can look at certain things that are worse than others as far as the organic and kind of focus on that and not beat ourselves up if we don't do everything right. Organic. Like, I really believe that we need to let ourselves off the hook here and not beat ourselves off all the time. I'm not doing everything out there, the perfectionism, right? And we need to let go because yeah. Perfectionism is a real killer. Well,
okay, we're talking about perfectionism. Agriculture is actually built on the perfect round apple, the perfectly red tomato, yeah. And it just doesn't exist. And I get into this discussion with people about food, and I say I eat a lot of wild foods. I'll just wander out into like there's wooded areas where I can find berries and stuff like that. Mm. I bring them home, and I do what I want with them. And go at it that way rather than taking it from the store because of that perfection idea.
Right. Yeah, that's a great way if you can do that. And
okay, well, that'll probably do it for today. Up next should be Particles and Waves. I'm looking forward to hearing some of the selections that Mia has for today. I'm going to leave you with a song, though. It's from a friend of mine, Kendra Sharp, and she's doing a cover tune of the Carly Simon song, You're So Vain.
Like you were walking onto a yacht, your hat strategically dipped below one eye, your scarf it was apricot, you had one eye in the mirror as you watched yourself gavotte, and all the girls dreamed that they'd be your partner, they'd be your partner, and you're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You're so vain.
You're so vain.
I bet you think this song is about you. Don't you? Don't you? Well, you had me several years ago when I was still quite naive. When you said that we made such a pretty and one of them was me. I had some dreams, there were clouds in my coffee, clouds in my coffee, and
you're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You're so vain.
You're so vain. I bet you think this song is about you. Don't you? Clouds in my coffee, and
you're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You're so vain.
You're so vain. I bet you think this song is about you. Don't you? Don't you? Well, I hear you went up to Saratoga, and your horse naturally won. Scotia to see the total eclipse of the sun. Well, you're